and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, October 26th. On this day in 1777, the siege of Fort Mifflin begins as British forces under Richard Howe attack the structure located on Mud Island in the Delaware River outside Philadelphia. After their victory at the Battle of Brandywine on September 11th, and later successes at Paoli and Germantown, the British wanted to command the entire Philadelphia region and crush George Washington's army, which later encamped at Valley Forge to regroup. In 1825, the Erie Canal opens, linking the Great Lakes with the Atlantic Ocean, an engineering feat which was a major force driving the American economy as shipping costs dropped substantially, encouraging commerce and settlement in the upper Midwestern states. New York Governor DeWitt Clinton was a major driving force behind the project, which transformed America and helped it to rise to the top tier of world economies later in the 19th century. And in 1881, one of the most famous events in the history of the American West occurs as the Earp brothers face off against the Clanton McClary gang in Tombstone, Arizona, in the shootout at the OK Corral. Tombstone became a thriving mining town after silver was discovered nearby, with prospectors flocking to the area looking for a quick fortune. The town was a Wild West theater, with cattle rustlers, horse thieves, and bandits raiding the area and causing trouble, the Clanton McClary gang among them. In the early days of the Republic, America's leaders knew the young nation needed to protect itself against not only England, but other countries which might try to attack her shores and overwhelm the country. Several forts were constructed along the East Coast, including Fort Mifflin just outside Philadelphia. Built on Mud Island in the Delaware River, a major artery for shipping to and from one of the nation's most bustling ports, Fort Mifflin was intended to be a fortress protecting the city. Fort Mifflin was the site of the major British attack 239 years ago today, when English commander Richard Howe began the siege of the fort following the successful actions against George Washington's army at the battles of the Brandywine, Paoli, and Germantown. After weeks of fighting, the fort was abandoned by American forces on November 15th. Today, the fort hosts a wide range of events, including reenactments, colonial demonstrations, and even a special Sleep with the Ghosts, which takes visitors through the many buildings and caverns where prisoners were held. Beth Beattie is the executive director at Fort Mifflin, and she oversees the many activities there throughout the year, including a Mud Island Halloween, a trick-or-treat, candlelight ghost tours, and siege weekend. Beth's here with us today. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Steve. My pleasure to be here.
How long have you been executive director there at Fort Mifflin?
I just had my 6th anniversary about a month ago.
And what are your major duties?
Well, I'm sort of a jack of all trades. We're responsible here for the execution of the fort's mission, which is the preservation and interpretation of the site, and bringing the history of the site and its service through all of the time periods to the public's attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, the fort is one of the oldest ones, I believe, on the East Coast. Could you tell us just a little bit about its history?
Yes, the fort actually predates the American Revolution. It was commissioned by the British in 1771 to defend the wealthy colonial city of Philadelphia. As you can imagine, being charged with building a fort on Mud Island is a challenging prospect, and the British chief engineer in America, John Montressor, was given a limited budget which did not serve adequate to complete the fort. So he actually departed, they abandoned the construction, leaving the western wall unfinished, and this becomes significant a few years later. By 1774, 1905, Benjamin Franklin is convening the Committee of Safety in Philadelphia and recognizes the strategic location of Fort Mifflin on Mud Island. At that point, it was called Mud Island Fort. And the Americans garrison it, and they try to make some improvements to it. And as you noted, during the Philadelphia campaign in the fall of 1777, after defeats at Brandywine, Paoli, and Germantown, the British actually are occupying the city of Philadelphia. And Washington needs to achieve winter quarters in Valley Forge, and he requires the fort at the garrison at Fort Mifflin to hold to the last extremity. With the help of their sister fort across the river in New Jersey, Fort Mercer, Fort Mifflin is able to delay the resupply of the British Army in Philadelphia by over 6 weeks. British had called for new supplies coming up the Delaware River in about 250 ships, the mightiest navy of the 18th century world. And against this extraordinary show of force, Fort Mifflin holds out longer than anyone ever expects.
Now, that holdout really, in effect, aided the American cause because, the delay in the British kind of getting into and occupying the whole region, that was a big help to the Americans. Is that correct?
That's absolutely. The battle here, even a British general referred to it as the costliest weeks of the war. Had the British been able to resupply their army, they would have given chase to George Washington, and he may not have even made it to Valley Forge. So we like to say that we forced the war to go on.
So the British bombardment this date in 1777, just tell us a little bit about the actual bombardment. I mean, what were the casualties? What actually happened?
Well, there was a five-week battle in building up to it where the Americans are trying to finish the fort, refortify the weaker areas of it. In early October, Major François de Fleury, a French engineer, arrives on the scene at the fort, and he is largely credited with the fort holding out as long as it does. It is under his direction that the garrison repairs under cover of darkness the damage of each day. Mm. And he is a tireless taskmaster, well known for rapping on the shoulder anyone he finds trying to catch a wink of sleep. So the Americans are furiously trying to make improvements to the fort and defend against a growing British assault. The British are constructing land batteries and floating batteries. They have an armada of vessels in the Delaware River. And the Americans just keep persevering. And the spirit of perseverance is something that really informs the fort's entire history. So this goes on and on and on, and ultimately Mother Nature provides the British with a couple of weeks of flooding rain. And remember, Fort Mifflin is built on a small island separated from the mainland by a narrow back channel. And this flooding rain allows the channel to deepen, the western channel behind the fort to deepen sufficiently so that the British are able to sail two vessels up there, the Vigilant and the Fury. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, on November 10th, 1777, the Americans awake to the beginning of the greatest bombardment of the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. Up to 1,000 cannonballs an hour rain down on the little fort. Mm-hmm. The garrison inside is reduced to being rewarded an extra gill or ration of rum for each incoming cannonball that had to fit one of the fort's working guns. So if you had the misfortune to get a 32-pounder, you were out of luck because the fort had no 32-pound guns to return the cannonball to the British.
Mm-hmm.
So it is under this kind of barrage that the Americans hold out for 5 days. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they're out of ammunition, they're out of black powder, and under cover of darkness, on November 15th, 1777, the garrison evacuates. But incredibly, they leave a detail of 40 young men behind who spike the last 10 working cannons, set fire to what the British hadn't already destroyed, and then they too evacuate. Mm-hmm. But the compelling thing that they do is they leave the flag flying. So although defeated, Fort Mifflin never surrendered.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the main structure of the fort seriously damaged?
Well, remember that there's that Western Wall that is merely an earthen embankment supported by wooden palisades. That is probably the greatest area of destruction at the fort. Some areas of the British stone walls do, in fact, remain, but none of the buildings inside the fort survive.
I see. Now, I have been to Fort Mifflin. By the way, for our listeners, if you haven't been there, it's a wonderful place to visit. It's just off of I-95 outside Philadelphia, near the Philadelphia Airport. So if you know where the airport is, Fort Mifflin is practically in the flyover zone, really, to the airport. You can see the planes flying overhead.
We joke that you can tell if the pilot shaved this morning.
Very close. But I have visited there, and it's just a wonderful place. Why are these early forts so important? Tell us a little bit about the heritage of these forts, specifically Fort Mifflin. Why do we consider them to be treasures of American history?
Well, I think I think military history often is surrounded with politics. And in some ways, that makes it an extra challenge to promote the interpretation of these sites. But really, they are responsible for bringing forth the birth of the nation. This is where young men died bringing a new nation to life. Mm-hmm. So it is steeped in tradition and inspiration, and informed by the thoughts of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I think that this is its hallowed ground, so to speak.
It is. And, you know, my view is that these forts need to be preserved. Many of them are well over 200 years old. And Fort Mifflin in this area comes to mind as the most important. I guess there's a couple in New Jersey as well. But I am so glad that you and your group have been focused on the fort and its preservation. We are just about to take a brief break for a commercial, but Beth, stay with us. We'll be right back with Living History.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
From Westchester to Coatesville, from Kennett to Chester Springs, from Parksburg to Paoli, this is your home for all things Chester County. WCHE 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
I'm I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're talking with Beth Beattie, the Executive Director at Historic Fort Mifflin outside Philadelphia. Beth, the fort, again, I have visited a few times. I absolutely love the place. I was there with what you call the Sleep with the Ghosts event a few years back, and the scene even it made it into my book, The Forgotten Star, which is really about not only Fort Mifflin, but a few other historic forts on the East Coast, and focuses on the star that is actually missing. It's really missing from the Star-Spangled Banner. But the Sleep with the Ghosts was really an enjoyable event. Tell us a little bit about that event.
Well, we really celebrate the paranormal phenomenon that occur at Fort Mifflin. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a believer or not. We encourage people to make their own determination of whether is the fort haunted. But we use our paranormal stories as another lens through which to view our documented history. So Sleep with the Ghosts is kind of our final event of our Mud Island Halloween celebration, and it invites people to actually spend the night and investigate. You can bring all kinds of technology and scientific equipment, or really just a cell phone and a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find anything when you were here?
Well, I actually did see something unusual, and I'll try to encapsulate it in just a sentence or two, a couple of sentences. I got up very early in the morning. We were sleeping in the barracks, of course. Got up very early the next morning after the night with the ghosts, and I walked to the down to the men's restroom. Early in the morning, it was still somewhat dusk, you know, kind of dark, I should say dark out, but you could just see the breaking light of day, and I used the restroom, came back out, and I was just standing there for a few moments, and I saw what I thought were some people approaching the area to go to the restroom. I thought it was a man and his girlfriend. Well, I was watching for a few seconds, and that was it. There was no man or girl. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure I saw someone walking. I mean, I couldn't identify them, you know, as a soldier or anything like that, but I swear I saw two people walking, and that was it. They disappeared. So I don't know what to make of that, but I can tell you it was an absolutely wonderful evening. I think it was the Pennsylvania Paranormal Group.
Mm-hmm.
It was the local paranormal society. They did a very interesting presentation with different recordings and things like that, which I found fascinating. And I think the group just thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's great. Yeah, this is coming up this coming Saturday night. And Old City Paranormal is our host group this on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be, apparently, the fort is quite active this season. We've had a number of people at our Candlelight Ghost Tours report being touched or capturing some really interesting pictures. And keep in mind, the Candlelight Ghost Tour is not an investigation. This is a stay-with-your-group tour guide-led experience telling the stories of unexplained phenomena that have happened here over the years.
Yeah, I'd done a bit of research, and even spoke with the paranormal people. It's my understanding that Fort Mifflin is one of the most, quote, haunted places on the East Coast. Is that accurate?
We are pretty much on every list of the most haunted sites in the country. And if you can imagine, it's not only the greatest bombardment of the American Revolution, but it went on to serve intermittently throughout the time period between then and 1954 when it was decommissioned. So there were people garrisoning, you know, at the fort during the yellow fever epidemic, the War of 1812. It was a prison during the Civil War, so there's all of that disease.
Mm.
And as you know, Fort was built on Mud Island, and we still take that seriously. So it is damp. There's mosquitoes in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many reasons why people might have died here.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that there have been several, I think, what you would call detailed sightings. People actually see soldiers in uniform. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, there are. People reportedly see the lamplighter, who is known to have gone around to light the gas lamps in front of the soldiers' barracks. People often, after battle reenactments and living history events, will see soldiers in uniform patrolling the top of the walls. Typically, I believe, in Civil War uniform, as the fort was a prison during the Civil War. There would have been a post, kind of service or standing watch in the evenings. We've had a couple of groups experience a Revolutionary War soldier in the Powder magazine, and they're not only seeing this entity but interacting with him.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was I believe there was a man hanged at the fort, and he was stayed in, was it casement 11?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that story. Is it William Houck?
William Howe, yes. Ironically, the same name as General Howe, who was in charge of the British forces at the time of the American Revolution. Private.
But no relation, right?
No relation, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Private Howe was a veteran of the Battle of Fredericksburg. He enlisted in the Army, volunteered, so he's not known to be a coward.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is Civil War we're talking about.
Civil War.
Yeah.
And I think this story is actually the fort's greatest public history teachable moment. For many years, we told his story in Casemate 5, which is a bomb-proof shelter built into the walls of the fort, where we know that all of the Union prisoners were held during the fort's term as a prison.
Mm-hmm.
So Howe became critically ill with dysentery, and rather than recuperate in an overcrowded Civil War hospital, he walked home to Perkiomenville, Pennsylvania.
Mm.
The enrolling officer and detail that was dispatched to arrest Howe, because he's now a deserter, arrived at Howe's house in the middle of the night. They're not in uniform, and a scuffle ensues. One of them is killed. Howe escapes, but now he is accused not only of desertion, but also of murder.
Mm-hmm.
He's ultimately apprehended and held here at Fort Mifflin, attempts escape, is recaptured, and then held at Eastern State Penitentiary. So it's a prisoner that we share with our neighborhood nearby historic site.
Mm-hmm.
But Howe was returned here to face his execution in August of 1864, the last public execution at the site.
Mm.
He was held in solitary confinement in Casemate 11, which was discovered in about 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And on excavation, we realized it was used as solitary confinement because prisoners signed their names down there.
I have seen that. That's fascinating.
It's very compelling. And this is actually the oldest part of the fort. We believe it to be the Powder magazine that dates to the British construction.
Mm. Now, he was hanged there, the reports are, over the years, have been that people actually have seen Howe. Is that correct?
Yes. As a matter of fact, sort of what set this whole ghost hunting craze off was a visit by the TAPS team shortly after Casemate 11 was discovered. And I believe it was Grant was down there. And there's a small ventilation tunnel. And when I say small, I mean it is very, very confined.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how I believe the prisoners down there were received their meals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was down there and looked into the window that faced what we know to have been Howe's chamber and saw a full apparition. And the way he describes the physical appearance of this apparition, it matches newspaper descriptions of Howe's appearance, which is a pretty interesting thing.
Interesting. Well, wow, that's fascinating. Now, for all our guests who and listeners who have never been to Fort Mifflin, not only can you see the casement where he stayed, but there are actually, I believe there's a little kind of a little plaque or some kind of a framing surrounding where he and others have kind of scribbled on the walls there.
Yeah, that's very good. We have some really serious conservation issues. As you can imagine, this is an underground area on a place named Mud Island, so there's been a lot of moisture, which is really difficult to manage down there. But we do have an easily viewed digital image of the signature available in our exhibit room.
Which is fascinating. I chose to include the first scene of my book right there at Fort Mifflin, my book, The Forgotten Star, which, by the way, is for sale at Fort Mifflin.
So
it's called The Forgotten Star, and any of you who have an interest in military history, including the Fort Mifflin's history and also the War of 1812, I think you'll truly enjoy it. In terms of the documentaries, I mean, I know some paranormal groups have been there over the years, probably dozens of them. Have any kind of historical groups put together documentaries about Fort Mifflin?
We don't have any that we have participated in the making of. There's, amateur filmmakers who come here at each weekend every year. And so there's a lot of stuff up there online. you can't believe everything you see on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
but there are some that are actually quite informative.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to add to the list of events that you have there, you do have the Mud Island Halloween, Trick or Treat, and the Candlelight Ghost Tour, in addition to the Sleep with the Ghost. So you've got a wide variety of events.
That's right. Our final night of Candlelight Ghost Tours is this Friday. First tour departs at 7. The last tour departs at 10. New tour leaves about every 20 minutes, and we're comfortable walking shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday is Trick or Treat with the Ghosts, where we bring some of our spirits into the light of day.
Mm.
And we have people doing first-person impressions of this. Kids in costume will receive treats.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sleep with the Ghosts if you dare on Saturday night.
Now, are there people there in period costumes?
On Saturday during the day, yes, for Trick or Treat, we will have people in various period attire over Revolutionary and Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, I know I had to ask this. Have you personally seen anything unusual at the fort?
That's a question I get asked a lot, especially during the month of October. I don't think I am very sensitive to this energy. I have heard things. I have had a physical response to a space. And I've been here when other people have had extraordinary experiences.
Mm.
But I haven't personally seen anything.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's easy for groups who go in there. They're almost hoping to see or hear something. And when we were there, quite frankly, just the experience of being with the paranormal group and walking around the old historic parts of the fort was just fascinating. What types of groups do you typically get there as visitors? School groups, civic groups?
It depends on the time of year. We do have a really robust scout camping program, and that runs 12 months a year. Pretty much every weekend, somebody is sleeping over at the fort, whether it's scouts or ghost hunters. So we've got the scouts. We're very busy, particularly in the spring, with school trips.
Mm-hmm.
And we run about a dozen living history events every year, plus our regular open public hours.
Oh, that is excellent. What would you call your peak season?
That's really easy. We're in one right now. The month of October is a very busy time. It's when we do a lot of nighttime programming. And then May, during the school tour season, is also very, very busy.
And again, for just to nail down the exact operating hours, what are your hours there?
Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Monday and Tuesday by chance or appointment.
Excellent. I thank you so much. The website for Fort Mifflin is simple, www.fortmifflin.us. And when people go to your website, what can they expect to find there?
We have a detailed list of our upcoming events and programs, information about things like renting the fort for your own private social function, our education programs, and a pretty extensive historic background page as well.
Excellent. Beth, thank you so much for joining us today. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, November 2nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with Elizabeth Laurent, the president of the Chester County Historical Society. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.